It's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Want to give you a moment to pick up a pencil and some paper, because there might be something that you really want to write down. Some address, email, phone number. You never know what it might be. Time and date, place. Something you might want to remember and show up to. Because there is stuff to do out there. Got your pencil and paper? All right, let's start off with the California Native Plant Society Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration this Saturday, July 12th, from 9 a.m. to noon. That's right, they are starting an hour earlier, and they're going to be cleaning up the Coast Dairies property. We will be doing follow-up removal of invasive non-native purple star thistle. Ken Moore from the Wildlands Restoration Team will be leading the day with two projects in May. Volunteers got the pastures done pretty well, but the purple star thistle staggers germination, so new ones keep coming up. Plants should be big enough now to see among the other rank weeds. See you there. The Coast Dairies property, owned for a century by the Coast Dairies and Land Company, was the third largest privately held piece of California coast from San Francisco to the Mexican border. This unique 7,000-acre property surrounds the small town of Davenport, boasts six watersheds, and more than 7 miles of coastal resources, including beaches, hundreds of acres of agricultural lands, redwood forests, and endangered species habitat. Come on out and give a helping hand protecting this spectacular land. How to get there? Well, there's no public access, so they will meet at the parking lot across from the Whale City Bakery in Davenport at 9 a.m., and then they'll caravan up the hill to the location. Once again, you must meet them in the parking lot across Highway 1 from the Whale City Bakery in Davenport. That's 11 miles north of Santa Cruz at 9 a.m. on Saturday, July 12th. The bakery's on your right, the parking lot's on your left, and they will carpool up there. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing. It might be a little foggy and drizzly. And bring something to drink and lots of enthusiasm, but then again, the sun may burn through. They work rain or shine, but if things get particularly unpleasant, they call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring your gloves and that all-important water. If you want more information, contact their program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 462-4041. Or email her at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN at pacbell.net, or go to their website at www.cruisecnps.org. And San Lorenzo River water quality monitoring is going to be taking place a week from today. That's July 17th from 8:30 in the morning until 1 in the afternoon on the lower San Lorenzo River. Once again, that's Thursday, July 17th, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. on the lower San Lorenzo River. And there will be future dates, it says here. As part of the San Lorenzo River Alliance objectives, the Coastal Watershed Council has launched a six-month water quality monitoring program on the lower San Lorenzo River. And we want you to join us to find out what's in your water. We are seeking volunteers to help collect field measurements and water samples in the San Lorenzo River and its tributaries. Volunteers are trained by the Coastal Watershed Council staff to take field measurements and collect samples for professional laboratory announcements. Sign up today. Contact Debbie at 831-464-9200. That's Debbie. Her number again, 831-464-9200. Or you could send her an email at djchirco. That's djchirco at coastal-watershed.org. And I hope you got all that. I am sure you can get all that at the webpage, coastal-watershed.org. And activists shut down this Seneca biomass plant in Eugene, Oregon. Three Earth Defenders had been taken into custody for the Monday action at the Seneca biomass burner in Eugene, Oregon. They need funds to assist with bail and legal defense. And this story from the Cascadia Forest Defenders, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Scores of activists with Cascadia Forest Defenders and Earth First converged on the Seneca Jones biomass plant Monday morning to protest the company's privatization of public lands in the Elliott State Forest and ongoing pollution in West Eugene, Oregon. Currently, several people locked themselves to equipment at the plant, effectively blocking the truck dump where biomass is loaded into the incinerator. A banner was dropped off of a tower reading Seneca Jones privatizing the Coast Range, polluting West Eugene. Activists were bringing attention to Seneca Jones Timber's role in privatizing the Elliott State Forest. This month, Seneca closed on their purchase of 788 acres in the Elliott State Forest called East Hackey Ridge. Co-owner of Seneca, Kathy Jones, recently expressed the company's intention to clear-cut East Hackey and replace it with Douglas Fir Plantation. Cascadia Forest Defender Richard Haley commented, "However Kathy Jones paints it, her company is a bad neighbor everywhere it operates. Here in Oregon, Seneca pollutes. In the Elliott, Seneca clear-cuts and puts up no trespassing signs in pristine, never-before-logged forest. East Hackey is no longer a place where locals can go to hunt, fish, hike, camp, or watch birds. Now it is corporate property." Coos Bay citizen science group Coast Range Forest Watch documented marble murrelet nesting behavior in East Hackey Ridge in May. The bird is federally protected under the Endangered Species Act, which prohibits actions that might injure or kill threatened species, including destruction of their habitat. A month after marble murrelets were found in East Hackey, conservation law organizations filed to sue Seneca Jones in the event of logging in the timber sale. Murrelets were also found in two timber sales purchased by timber company Roseburg Forest Products. Another parcel is up for sale this fall, and the State Land Board is considering privatizing the entire forest. Despite Seneca's claim of being sustainable, the biomass plant failed its first EPA air pollution test in 2011 and requested more state funds to offset its production costs. In spite of its high impact on local air quality, Seneca receives $10 million in tax credits from the state of Oregon under the Business Energy Tax Credit Program. Quote, "The plant has had a bad reputation in this community since its beginning," said West Eugene resident Matthew Hawks. "It's marketing itself as a green solution in my neighborhood, which is actually harming the environment around it, especially the air we breathe," unquote. The plant, which employs 11 people, releases an estimated 17,900 pounds of air toxins into West Eugene neighborhoods annually, with the addition of 73,000 of pounds released each year from the mill itself. There are three schools within 3 miles of the Seneca biomass facility. Quote, "While clear-cutting and privatization in the Elliott State Forest is done in the name of public schools, this irresponsible company is making millions of public dollars and impacting the health and safety of school children in their own neighborhood. It really feels twisted," unquote, said Cascadia Forest Defender Cordelia Finney. The Eugene-based The Eugene-based Cascadia Forest Defenders carried out the action with activists from across the continent following an annual Earth First campout in the woods of Northern California called the Earth First Round River Rendezvous. And update from the Matol, help is needed from Save Ancient Forest as found on the Earth First Newswire. The blockade in the Matol area of California continues amidst pressure from local law enforcement and logging company representatives. The blockade was deployed on a logging road in the Matol Forest, preventing the extraction of over 1,000 acres of old-growth forest in southern Humboldt. Thursday morning, four sheriffs and Humboldt Redwood Company executives showed up at the road blockade. They threatened to re-anchor the lines of the tripod blockade, putting the sitter at risk. "We have confirmed they have arrested and released one person, but that the blockade of old-growth logging remains. The cops have said that they will return with dogs." This blockade marks the second action this month. Last week, a tree sitter going by the name of Skunk climbed into the canopy, insisting our main demands in Humboldt Redwood Company are very simple. Don't cut unlogged forest and don't cut old growth. This road threatens to destroy forest that has never been logged before and will pave the way for logging even more important habitat if the community does not rise up to stop it, unquote. The blockade could use more support. Please contact Save Matol Ancient Forest at gmail.com. That's Save Matol's Ancient Forest at gmail.com. If you want to volunteer with the campaign or donate money and materials, there are more updates that will be posted at www.saveancientforest.org. That's www.saveancientforest.org. And here is the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. While many Americans were gearing up to celebrate Independence Day, freedom wasn't ringing for a small family group of America's last wild buffalo. Just west of Yellowstone National Park, near the South Fork of the Madison River, the most American of all creatures were being subject to the tyranny of an unjust government. Over a course of 2 days, the Buffalo Field Campaign documented Montana Department of Livestock stock inspectors hazing around 30 wild buffalo moms and calves off of their habitat, chasing them through the cattle-free public lands of Gallatin National Forest, and pushing them into the interior of Yellowstone National Park, and using federal dollars to do this unnecessary dirty work. With no justification whatsoever for the maltreatment of this American icon, the Montana Department of Livestock has formed a very bad habit over the last 2 decades. They are simply addicted to abusing wild buffalo. And you can help the Buffalo Field Campaign help them kick the habit. And you can find out more information about how you do that at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. Reading on, the Department of Interior recently announced that they intend to restore bison to various portions of the landscape, but there is madness to their method. From a buffalo's perspective, one shared by the Buffalo Field Campaign, restoration happens naturally, simply through walking, freely migrating into the lands that wild buffalo have been absent from for nearly 200 years. Wild buffalo attempt to restore themselves year after year and would succeed with no interference from humans, no plans, or no funding would be necessary. Yet they are repeatedly blocked by politics masquerading as science. The Department of Interior wants to use America's last wild buffalo, the Yellowstone herds, as seed stock to safeguard genetics and artificially place bison on specific landscapes in the country. Their main tool would be quarantine, which involves capture and years of confinement and domestication for wild buffalo in order to create docile, brucellosis-free animals that would be placed on landscapes surrounded by fences. The Department of Interior's false platform is that Yellowstone holds surplus buffalo, extra animals that must be removed from an already dangerously tiny and vulnerable population. This is absolutely false. There are no surplus buffalo. This remnant population of fewer than 4,200 animals is ecologically extinct. Yellowstone National Park's own carrying capacity study determined that lands within the park itself can sustain upwards of 6,200 wild buffalo, about 50% more than they have now, and with hundreds of thousands of acres of public land surrounding the park, many thousands more buffalo could flourish. Reducing the world's most significant bison herds to seed stock misses the entire point of restoring a keystone wildlife species and placates livestock interests. Wild buffalo are so much more than their genetics. Their wild integrity is in their behavior, their character, their very spirit, which the Department of Interior plan would kill. So please contact Interior Secretary Sally Jewell and remind her that true restoration does not include capture, domestication through quarantine, transport through livestock trucks, fencing, and becoming more genetic seed stock, culling, or any other livestock model management scheme. True restoration is simple. Let buffalo be buffalo, to walk the earth, roam, migrate, and return to the lands that are their birthright. Self-willed and wild are the ways of the buffalo. The Department of Interior's plans, with all of its intensive intervention, is the way of cattle. If you want more information about the Buffalo Field Campaign, their extensive and very informative webpage is www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And if you visit and tend to spend a little bit of time there, when you figure out what they need, send it to the Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana. The zip code is 59758. If you have any questions about what they need or about the Buffalo Field Campaign, give them a call. The area code is 406-646-0070. Once again, 406-646-0070. Once again, the webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And here's a short SAB story. A hunting tower was sabotaged in this story from Bite Back, reported anonymously and found on the Earth First Newswire. Wild whistles are narrow forest paths in Germany along which wild boars and deer move in search for food and water. Under the guise of the vulnerability and need for resting areas of wild animals, these paths are off-limits for people. However, at the end of one such forest path is a 9-meter, about 30-foot tall, hunting tower. To secure achieving real rest for the animals, this object was recently damaged beyond repair. From 3 of the 4 pillars, barbed wire attached to the thick poles against cutting was cut loose to make room for saw blades. These 3 pillars and all lower cross connections were cut loose, after which the stairs and the complete hunting tower was pulled out of balance. The tower is now very unstable, skewed, resting on a single pillar. With these adjustments, this hunting tower became unusable and irreparable. And 2 animal rights activists have been indicted under the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act in this story by Will Potter, published in Green is the New Red and found on the Earth First Newswire. 2 animal rights activists have been indicted on federal terrorism charges for allegedly releasing 2,000 mink and fox from fur farms in the Midwest. Tyler Lang and Kevin Olif were charged with 2 counts of violating the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act and committing animal enterprise terrorism. Olif is currently in jail in Illinois, where he was sentenced to 30 months in jail for having bolt cutters in his Prius. Lang was arrested outside of a veggie grill restaurant in Los Angeles on Thursday, July 10th. He had traveled to prepare for a fundraiser at the restaurant to benefit the Bunny Alliance, an animal rights group with which he volunteers. When he saw FBI agents walking up to the restaurant, he said he knew something was wrong. He was on the phone with a friend who joked that they were there to spy on an animal rights fundraiser. Before he was arrested, he told his friend to call my lawyer. At Lang's bail hearing at a Los Angeles federal courthouse, the government asked for a $30,000 bond, which is $20,000 above what pretrial services had recommended. The prosecutor did not request that Lang be jailed awaiting trial, but said Lang was a flight risk because of his extreme activism. He has plans to travel the country for what he calls nonprofit work, the prosecutor said, but what the government calls violent civil disobedience. Lang had planned on beginning a tour this weekend with other volunteers protesting airlines that transport primates for animal experimentation. Lang may not be able to attend the protest, but other volunteers said that they are undeterred. Quote, we knew that Tyler would want us to carry on with the Flight or Fight tour, said Amanda Schmicks, a Bunny Alliance volunteer. I'm not sure I pronounced that word right. Schmicks? Continuing on with her quote, it's to further the campaign against the transport of animals to labs as well as build and empower grassroots activism in the face of state repression. Our work to help animals continues to be motivated by them rather than stifled by attempts to chill activism, unquote. The indictments come as hundreds of animal rights activists are in Los Angeles for this weekend's National Animal Rights Conference, where a prominent theme is corporate efforts to label nonviolent protest activity as terrorism. Releasing animals from fur farms is clearly against the law, but in the history of underground groups like the Animal Liberation Front, not a single human being has been harmed, yet the FBI continues to label animal activism as terrorism. New ag-gag laws go even further, criminalizing whistleblowers, undercover investigators, and journalists who expose animal cruelty on factory farms. As FBI agents and prosecutors prepared for Lang's bail hearing, it was clear that even they were a bit confused about this terrorism case. Outside of the courtroom, one FBI agent was overheard on the cell phone saying, quote, no, he is being charged with damaging property, not damaging animals. They are against that, unquote. And the California red-legged frog has been named California's state amphibian in this story from SF Gate. The The frog made famous in a tale by Mark Twain is now California's official state amphibian. Governor Jerry Brown signed legislation elevating the red-legged frog on June 30th. The state library updated its online list of symbols the next day, although the bill doesn't officially take effect until January. Members of an after-school club at Seaview Elementary School in Imperial County proposed AB 2364, which was carried by Assemblyman V. Manuel Perez of Coachella. The red-legged frog is only found in California and was large enough to serve as a meal for gold rush miners. It is now protected under the Federal Endangered Species Act. It joins the grizzly bear, the California redwood, and square dancing, the state folk dance, as one of 36 California state symbols. And a California man has pleaded guilty to bobcat poaching. A Sacramento County man recently pled guilty to multiple criminal charges and was fined for unlawfully trapping dozens of bobcats and fox for commercial purposes in Northern California. Tracy Lee Schultz, 57, from Cortland, California, was fined $5,000 and forfeited 60 poached bobcat and fox pelts worth almost $15,000 on the commercial market. Schultz ultimately pled guilty to several violations of the California Fish and Game Code, including taking bobcat outside of the established season, unlawful capture and confinement of a live mammal, possession of unlawfully taken pelts, knowingly filing false information to obtain bobcat tags, and unlawfully taking wildlife for profit or personal gain. He is also prohibited from hunting, fishing, trapping, or accompanying anyone on such a trip during his one-year probation. In November of 2012, Lassen County, California Department of Fish and Wildlife Warden Nick Buckler received an anonymous tip from a hunter that commercial bobcat traps were being set before the season opened. Warden Buckler started his investigation, during which he spent nearly every day and night of the 70-day season living out in the sage, bitterbrush, and rimrock of remote Lassen County, observing and documenting the trapper. Sometimes the smallest bit of information can lead to a large-scale investigation, said Buckler. I feel lucky to live and work in a county that cares so much about its fish, wildlife, and habitats. The illegal commercialization of wildlife is second only to the illegal trade in drugs and guns for worldwide revenue. There will always be people willing to break laws and exploit wildlife to make money. Warden Buckler spent 3 months observing Schultz, documenting his movements and locating and monitoring his traps in order to obtain sufficient evidence. At one point during the season, Schultz returned to his Sacramento County home for a week, leaving a spotted skunk trapped in freezing temperatures. After Sacramento County game wardens relayed to Schultz remained at home for several days, Warden Buckler released the trapped animal unharmed. On January 31st of 2013, 2 teams of wildlife officers served search warrants on locations in Sacramento and Modoc counties. The 2 teams seized a large volume of evidence from Schultz, including his ATV, trailer, trapping journal, trapping, skinning, and storage equipment, nearly 50 large commercial live traps, and 60 illegally taken bobcat and gray fox pelts. Trapping bobcat for commercial purposes is legal in California with a season that starts on November 24th of each year. Trappers licensed through the California Department of Fish and Wildlife are required to check their traps and remove all captured animals at least once daily. Schultz had about 50 tagged live traps set throughout more than 900 square miles of remote Lassen and Modoc counties. This extensive trapping area made it impossible for Schultz to check each trap daily and allowed him to trap more area, spending less gas and cheat other trappers who followed the law. Pursuant to state law, all the furs were sold to a licensed fur dealer and the $14,835 check was held in an account while the case was underway. As part of the conviction, the Lassen County Superior Court judge ordered the money paid to the Lassen County Fish and Game Commission, where it will be used to promote and support lawful hunting and fishing, as well as fund wildlife habitat improvement and restoration in the county. Many times cases such as this could not be made without the assistance of sportsmen and sportswomen who help wildlife officers by reporting poaching and pollution. It often takes the help of concerned citizens in conjunction with the county district attorney's office to reach successful outcomes. Now more than ever, wardens need the assistance of the public to protect our valuable natural resources, Buckler said. Hunters, anglers, trappers, and citizens can be our eyes and ears on the ground. License plates, descriptions, and accurate locations are the best information the public can provide. California Department of Fish and Wildlife officers patrol more than 220,000 square miles of ocean and 159,000 square miles of land in California. While the number of wardens has increased in the last few years, California still has the lowest number of wildlife officers per capita in the United States. If you do witness a wildlife crime, you are encouraged to call the 24-hour CalTIP hotline, 888-334-2258. That's 888-334-2258. All calls can be kept anonymous. If you'd like more information, go to the website www.dfg.ca.gov. And Yolo County jury has, well, let's see, do I have enough time for that one? Well, we can do a quickie. Yolo County jury convicts sturgeon poachers. A Yolo County jury convicted a repeat sturgeon poacher and his accomplice of multiple felonies and poaching charges stemming from a 2010 poaching investigation. They were convicted on June 19th with sentencing scheduled for August 1st. On February 2010, Nikolai Krasnodemsky, 41, of North Highlands, and his partner Peter Dyakushin, 54, of Citrus Heights, were observed catching and retaining oversized sturgeon and processing their eggs into caviar. An extensive investigation conducted by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife officers from the Delta Bay Enhancement Enforcement Project and Special Operations Unit proved the two were selling the sturgeon and their eggs on the black market for personal profit. Sale of sturgeon, their parts, or any fish caught with a recreational fishing license is illegal. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz and is a production of Earth First Radio. If you'd like to listen to a rebroadcast of this show, you can tune in tomorrow afternoon right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 3 o'clock. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, or www.freakradio.org. If you are in Moscow, Idaho, or the immediate neighborhood thereof, you can tune in to KRFP, Radio Free Moscow, at 90.3 FM on Monday nights at 9:30 p.m. And if you go to the website www.radioforall.net, that's radio, the number, forall.net, you can download or listen to a podcast of the Earth First Update. Just search for Earth First. Don't forget the exclamation point radio news or Earth First exclamation point update. And listen there. You can... And I ask you to please support Radio for All. They need your money. They have been having some tough financial times. Well, that's it for the Earth First Update for this week. Thanks for tuning in, and we will be back next week with another edition of the Earth First Update.